kind of like what they say about people having a face for radio. We're doing podcasts. It doesn't matter what we it doesn't matter what the photo looks like.
We're not filming on purpose.
That's right. Though I've heard that apparently video podcasts are like really where it's at these days.
Yeah.
But it's also a lot more work.
Yeah. Well, probably it's wouldn't fun, be considering then we have a backup on audio.
Well, not so a good backup if you're doing video audio. Yeah, so we had recorded this really good episode, I thought anyway.
I thought so too.
With the Duluth Grill people, and they told us all about the history of the Duluth Grill location and kind of just like the restaurant biz in Duluth
and
stuff.
Cool.
And expanding from into like OMC and stuff, and then their new place. And then I opened up the file in the editing program, and it was like an hour long or whatever.
Yeah,
but there was no sound in it. It was just a big long empty file.
So I went, well, I backed it up. So I went to the backup, and the backup
was
the same
too. Huh.
And I'm like, well, but I have it on that thumb drive, so I'm like, I have it in three spots.
Sure,
they're all the same corrupted bad.
Huh.
I don't know. I blame it on me, no doubt. I mean,
when after it was first revealed that this had happened, I thought, no, it's that 25-year-old Mac sitting in there or whatever.
No. I trust that 25-year-old Mac over me any day.
Is it 25 years old? Is that
nah,
that's too old, isn't it? That's how
it's got little mice turning it.
That's what that squeaking sound is.
It's probably like the little hairs coming off the mice that are clogging up the.
They're all stuck in the fans.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Usos podcast.
Woo-hoo!
I'm one of your hosts, Terry.
I'm almost a host.
Almost.
No, it might be. I'm Jason.
You're a co-host.
Oh, yeah.
And Jason, what's happening? Why are we here this month? What happened?
Well,
what happened? No, that's not a good way to word that.
Happened?
What happened? Just what's the reason for the season?
Well, we're always thinking of someone fun in the community, and we've got our friend Ian Alexi, who's definitely part of the community. He's been here a long time, and now he's literally stuck in this building a lot.
So before we were recording and everything, you guys were talking about old amps and stuff, and I wasn't following any of it because this is a conversation we've talked about before where it's like, Jason, you're very into like the older, more tangible, physical, what's the word I'm thinking of?
Analog,
that's the word I couldn't think of.
Tangible, physical, though, I think,
but
we should rebrand that.
It's analog, yeah. You're very much into analog. And so based on the conversation, Ian, are you as well?
I am. I think with the old amps, we were talking about Jason's got an old Music Man and an old Gibson amp, and I have an old Fender, and they require like power tubes like in an old television set or old radio. So they also require a lot of maintenance because those tubes go bad and cause all kinds of terrible sounds and stuff.
It's probably harder to get Russian tubes these days.
Yeah,
too.
They're made in Russia.
Because Russia was the last place to make them because even their Air Force still used tubes because...
Oh, wow. I never knew why.
Yeah, like the Megs and stuff. It's like if there was like a nuclear blast, it wouldn't take out the tubes.
Yeah.
But it would take out your computer.
Well, hopefully U.S.-Russian relations stay good enough that we can still import tubes so we can use our amp.
And hopefully there's not a nuclear cold spell.
Yeah, that would be the worst part of that, though, is the fact that you couldn't get tubes anymore. So, yeah, so you're a musician. Maybe that's what we should mention, too. I know at the very least guitar. Is there more than that?
Yeah, I'm a singer-songwriter as far as the music that I put out there to the world under my own name, and a guitarist, and I'm also a guitar teacher, and I teach here in the building above Wusos.
If people were wanting lessons, do they?
Driftless Guitar Lessons on Facebook, or it's also just on Google. If you Google it, Driftless Guitar Lessons in West Duluth.
I'll try to link it in the description of the thing.
Or if you're getting a latte, I could
or
say
just,
he's just upstairs and you could leave him a note and we'll tape it to the wall.
You should get like a buzzer by the register that you could just press and then it would whatever what you're doing in your apartment.
I don't think he would like that.
Yeah, maybe not.
but how
that's
efficient.
Why I don't live upstairs.
And then so then to kind of finish my thought.
Yeah.
Do you typically then prefer, like Jason, more analog things in general, or are you kind of just appreciative of it? But then
I'm appreciative of it, and it generally does sound better. But I also the practicalness of digital with recording and stuff. I if I could afford to do everything on analog, maybe I would, but I can't. And the convenience of digital.
And I have to. Yeah. I'm in the same boat. It's like
it's kind of
like it's really cool to have something amazing, but if you don't, if you're not a repair technician with Ultimate Time. And,
yeah.
And,
but as far as guitar amplifiers, yes. And that's why we both put up with the tubes going bad, because there's really no other way to create that sound. It's like part of the sound of the electric guitar.
And a modern thing is just to get the, a lot of modern bands just have a pod, a like pretty much a direct box that you plug into right. that has all these modeling amps and algorithms, and they do sound okay. And yeah. I think overall, sometimes maybe it could trick a lot of people or everyone possibly, but
yeah,
but if you know kind of thing, or
I'm not sure if I'm tricking myself or what, but I just like an amp that you turn on, you turn it up, and you hear it, you know, but it's like in your monitors, it goes into a whole ecosystem of, you know, the new world. It's like metal bands, you know, used to come in with full stacks and the biggest, loudest drums. And now metal bands come in and they have a drum set and nothing else on stage. And they just have a rack of gear and in-ear monitors. And it, in some ways, does sound better because it's so balanced and metal, you can deal with the volume and then get the tone they want.
I'm not much of a music person. So a lot of this conversation I'm trying to compare to, like, as my experience as a cartoonist, but I do notice whenever I've gone to see live music, my biggest issue is always like, well, I feel like I like what they're doing, but I can't quite like hear it. Mm-hmm. It just kind of is almost like noise.
Yeah.
And so I can imagine being able to kind of get more fine control.
Yeah, there's definitely an advantage to that. And things like in-ear monitors, I really like certain innovations. And I think that, you know, music, it to some degree is always kind of following the technology. Like even in the world of like bluegrass music or something, like I saw Trampled by Turtles at XL Energy Center, and like that, it would have been possible to do that 20 years ago, definitely not 30 or 40 years ago, to have an all acoustic string band fill up a hockey arena and have it sound amazing, you know?
Right.
So even though
even 57 though, in the stand up bass in a piece of
like you
towel.
See those like old footage of like Bob Dylan, and there's, you know, six microphones in front of them and they're feeding back. It's like, so even though like with those guys they're playing a more traditional style of music, it takes like the technology of today for it to be on the level that it is. Same with the Avett brothers and, you know, Mumford and Sons, kind of I don't know, it seemed like the first arena bluegrass sort of band or arena
grass.
Yeah.
Oh man. I just got cold a little cold.
But it's like long, yeah. Like Olden in the Way, the bluegrass band with Jerry Garcia, he says they quit because they couldn't hear themselves because everybody would be partying at their shows and it would just drown them out.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's the way I feel like Charlie Parr, all his earliest days, it's like he had his every Wednesday at the brew house and I'd go there. It's like, you really can't hear this, but it's a party. It's fun.
So yeah.
There's a mix of that. Right. But when you're playing, you do want to hear yourself.
Yeah.
Even if the crowd doesn't care and doesn't want to listen, you want to hear yourself.
Right. Cause it's so difficult to play.
So if you can at least turn the monitor up and shut off the noise of the bar, that helps.
Yeah.
In your monitors, yeah, perfect.
How much in that situation, as the performer, how much do you actually care that people are paying attention? Like, are you happy enough just to be playing music, or
you should always be happy, right?
But
it's kind of hard to just be like, you know, it just really depends. Like sometimes it's a really cool vibe and everyone's having a great time, but sometimes when they turn on the TVs and they're watching football and the only cheer is when there's a touchdown. And then they ask you to quit early and say they'll still pay you, but can you just stop? No, that's a hard one to swallow.
That one does sound a little more personal.
But that kind of stuff happens all the time. I mean, there's like, you're just in a spot where I don't know why you booked music, but you did. And
yeah,
you probably won't again, but we decided to do this. So
yeah, I certainly like care that people are listening, but if a lot of times there is a situation where you're not really put in a situation to succeed and it's difficult to like engage with the audience because of several different possible distractions or whatever.
Well, you want to connect with the
audience. But you always want to. Yeah. I mean, otherwise, what would you be doing?
Well, for an instance, you can be in a really cool spot where everyone's talking.
Yeah.
And you know, there's a lot of people there that want to hear you. But right. for some reason, they decide to have the 80-year-old birthday party in the 20 top right in front of the band.
Yeah. Totally.
And then put all your friends and fans in the background. And you're like, well, this could have been thought out a little better. Because it's like hearing aids are going off. And it's like, can you guys turn down? Or yeah. it's like, we'll just leave. Don't worry. We'll tip ourselves.
But one thing is, whatever the situation, I just try to play as good as I can and to focus as good as I can. And then I usually feel fine when it's over, whether because how the audience reacts or doesn't react is up to them.
It's sure,
like,
sure.
I mean, like you just do as good a job as you can. And that's all you can really do. You know?
So when you say how many times have you thought things are not going good and no one likes it? And then as soon as you're done, you sell like a bunch of albums and yeah, everyone and loves you.
And everyone leaves.
You're like, or yeah. well, either they leave and say bye, whatever. Yeah. They don't say bye. But sometimes you get done and you think you're just not catching anyone's ear. And right. they just come up and that's amazing. My friend, my blah, blah, blah. Right. I want an album. You guys are awesome.
That, yeah,
it's
that
like,
happens
huh?
a lot.
Really?
And that's why it's important to just play as well as you can. Because sometimes, like you said, it's like you don't realize that people are listening or enjoying it as much as they are. And then they mm-hmm. come up and talk about it and they know everything about what you just did. And it's like, oh, okay. And
we take New Orleans to Duluth. It's like and everywhere in between, the audiences are so different. You go to Minot, North Dakota, that's like Duluth next level of like sitting back and not talking. Yeah. You know, it's like you play in Minot, in my opinion, every time I've played there, it's like, It's a cool little town and there's a lot of cool people, but you don't think they like you at all. But then when you're done, they really like you and the owner of the record store is there and it's like, you guys are really quiet. I thought Minnesota was quiet. Minot, North Dakota's next level.
Yeah.
It's never really occurred to me that, but we are, I guess, kind of subdued people here, aren't we?
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
Oh, geez, yeah. I didn't.
We're just getting ready to shovel and we better go to bed early.
Yeah, and I'm from Jersey, so
okay.
the culture difference is really different because New Jersey, you know, people are very outward in positive and negative ways. Mm-hmm. You know, like they will let you know what they're thinking and they'll ask you what you're thinking. You know, it's very much more confrontational in good and bad ways. but yeah, because that, you know, that's that culture. But this is like cold weather, cold.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really? So, you've toured a lot. So yeah. What do you think Minnesota?
As far as audiences?
It versus like California versus Jersey. That's
so different.
So different. And then Southwest is so different too.
Yeah. I like Minnesota a lot and Wisconsin a lot. Even though like people are more subdued, there is like a lot of people are really listening.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I love that.
And especially for like, I do a lot of solo acoustic stuff. So that's nice. Like when I was living on the East Coast, when I started playing music, there wasn't as much of a scene for like singer songwriters. I was in Vermont and there was a scene for it, but like there was much more with that going on here. And in fact, the first time I played here was on a tour from Vermont.
Really?
Yeah. Teague booked me some shows in Duluth and maybe even, I think he booked me in Eau Claire.
He's talking about his brother, Teague Alexi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I probably did some shows with him, but I don't know if I had my first CD out, but I was at least working on it. And I did a tour, you know, just a few shows scattered between here and Vermont, like anything I could piece together.
Yeah.
Like I played in Buffalo, New York, and I played in the Quad Cities. What I can't remember the name.
Iowa City.
Rock Island, I think is where I played.
Okay, yeah.
And I think Eau Claire and Minneapolis and up here.
That's some good towns, though.
Yeah, yeah, it was great.
Quad City and Eau Claire.
But this was the best show, Wusos, because the Buffalo one was like two homeless guys like getting out of the cold. The Rock Island one
had a coffee house that allowed it.
The Rock Island one was actually good, come to remember. But this one was like a full packed room, and it was me and Pete Eckstam.
Oh, man.
And Eric Berry from the Trampled was playing with Pete Eckstam.
God.
And probably a third band.
That's good.
Yeah, and that was great because it was like the whole tour I was waiting for an audience to like listen to what I was doing, you know?
Yeah. Because
when you're touring like that,
you've never done a tour to a new area, you're breaking ground, sod busting, you're just working to just meet anyone and find a place to stay. And
you're in the car all day, you know, thinking about the music and thinking about the show. So it's like you're just waiting to like...
Whap you down.
To just get in a situation to succeed, basically. Mm-hmm. And this was that show for me on that tour. So
that's so cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. I don't remember that exact show, but I remember all those names you mentioned in that time frame. Pete Extam. That's cool.
Yeah.
I haven't thought of that name in a bit.
Yeah, he moved to Portland. I think he's still out there.
He's awesome. That's
cool. Yeah, great guitarist.
So one question I have for most people is, if you're not from here, I always wonder how people ended up here. And then also then specifically, why would you stay? Not why would you. I like it here a lot. So,
right,
but I'm
right.
curious why people end up in that situation.
Yeah. Things happen so fast. Well, my brother Teague was out here first. His now ex-wife was from here. And he was out here doing music. He was playing with you, I think, No Room to Pogo. And he was doing his solo stuff.
He showed up at open mic.
And he was doing well with it. And he was starting to tour a little bit. And I would come out here and play with his band and play myself. And I really just kind of liked the music scene here. And I was in Vermont at the time, which is sort of similar, but...
What was the town in Vermont?
I lived outside of Burlington, like 20
minutes. Okay, on the north side.
Yeah. Gosh, I can't even think of what the name of the town was.
I
lived in a few different places. I lived in Montpelier in that area as well. And I lived right in Burlington for a while. Yeah, I don't know. It was just more of a jazz scene there, I think, and funk and hip-hop. And I liked the... more salt of the earth singer songwriter thing out here. I was listening to like Greg Brown and stuff like that a lot. And that sound, even though Greg Brown's from Iowa, that sort of Midwestern folk sound I associated
with. It's
so
similar though.
Yeah. And if you think about it, you know, Bob Dylan's from here. Neil Young is from in Canada, but near this part of the continent.
Mm-hmm.
John Prine is from Chicago or Illinois somewhere.
Hmm.
It's all North Midwest, you know, Joni Mitchell, the list goes on and on. So I that was part of it, but I enjoyed the people a lot. And gosh, I don't know. I think I was breaking up with a girlfriend back east too.
Catalyst.
Just ended up here. Yeah.
Yeah. That'll do it.
Should I sign a lease or move? Yeah. Take that ferry across Lake Champlain.
Yeah, that was how that tour
did you do
started.
It? Did you do
well,
it?
Well, not. I don't
go
know
over
if I
to
did
Essex
when I moved, but
going.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The very beginning of that tour that I was talking about that ended here. It started.
Did you play in upstate New York on the way then?
No, but I was on my way to Buffalo.
So your first show is Buffalo.
Yeah,
I played in Buffalo. So Ian and Teague had a band, Hobo Nephews of Uncle Frank, which was.
That's a good name.
Was a great band. And I think it was the last New Year's show we did here, Stuart Davis and Hobo Nephews of Uncle Frank.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
That was like, I was like, this is not working, doing New Year's Eve parties at this cafe, because that's when we started this 24-hour all-day jam thing instead, because it's like, because we're more of the folk scene or kind of the punk scene or emerging talent. I love the Hobo Nephews and... Double stomp boxes.
Yeah, we did that for a long time and all over the country, and we made 6 albums, I think.
Wow. You guys hit it hard. I mean,
we did.
You toured hard.
Yeah, it was our life for about 10 years.
There. Yeah. Well, Woodblind got to open up for your 10-year anniversary party.
cool.
At Turf Club.
Oh, yeah, cool.
That was a fun day.
That was great, yeah. Forgot about that.
It flies by, that's why.
It does. Pew, pew,
pew. Yeah, so how long ago was the 10-year anniversary?
I don't know. Almost 10 years ago.
Well.
Yeah.
No, it couldn't have been. Well, your tenure was.
It was either like 2015 or 2016.
Yeah, it wasn't Woodblind's tenure. So when this place turned, well, it's coming up, I suppose, because I was 23 when this place opened.
I guess you're on, what, 21, 22 now?
We're going to be on 26.
26?
So it's like when I passed, like when I've did this longer than anything else I've done in my life. It's like I have run this little cafe thing for more than half my life and longer than anything else I've ever, you know, tried, thought about. Or it's like, whoa, this is like three or four major relationships. This is, you know, it's like when you start adding up like mile markers in your life, it's like, wow, this is crazy. It's been this long. You know, you start thinking about stuff like that. It's like, what?
Well, good job, man. Cheers. It's not easy. How many cafes last, 3 years?
No, that's what people always talk about. How it's like a stupid idea to open a restaurant or a cafe.
It is, and I support that idea. It's so silly. I mean, but if you have cats, my mom just went to Wired Whisker with my sister. I'm like, oh my god, that's a good idea now.
If you've got your niche, it's one thing, and I think you very much do what you said earlier about having these, you have the singer-songwriter types, you have the emerging talent, you have the punk scene, so you've got, there's an audience among also
plus,
like the
regular. I love singing mice, so you can't have cats with singing mice.
Yeah, that would be a disaster. Yeah, so
danger.
In the, as you know, calling back earlier, the mice are running the computers. So.
I know.
So no cats.
No cats here. One thing we didn't mention on your East Coast side, though, so Vermont was pretty close to home, but then Berkeley.
Yeah. I went to Berklee College of Music in Boston pretty much right out of high school. I did their summer program, and then I went for two semesters. So it was like three semesters altogether. And that was amazing. I mean, you sort of get thrown in the deep end because it's these kids from all around the world, these amazing musicians. And I'm not sure how I got in. I can't remember.
Must have been that Jersey side.
I don't know. I muscled my way in. You're going to let my son into the school, all right? If you know what's good for you. No. I passed some kind of entrance exam, I guess, by the skin of my teeth. But when I got there, I was very much, thrown in the deep end. I remember being in an ear training class that I somehow tested in above my skills. And there were kids in there from like all over the world, these like the best students at their school in France and, all over the place. And I'm just like, what am I doing here? I think I had to drop a level at some point and like go down to the, that was like ear training one. I had to go down to ear training two or something, which was a huge relief because I just felt like, oh my God, these kids are way beyond where I'm at. But that's what was great about it. And it made me get way better really fast. Because I remember going back to New Jersey and jamming with my friends, and all of a sudden, everyone's like, whoa, what happened to you? And it's like, well, I've been locked in a practice room for the last 3 months trying to keep up with, these kids from France and Brazil and stuff. Yeah.
Do you ever have people maybe even in that situation where then they're like, I could just never, and you're like, well, you could, but
what
you
do
also
you mean, never?
Because for me, they'll see me drawing and they say, I could just never do that.
They
hear you playing and they say, I could never. And it's like, well, no, you could. You just also have to then lock yourself in a room.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
I feel like I'm having that conversation a lot with people.
It's like the tipping point.
I don't even believe in natural talent. I mean, I believe it to a degree.
I think
like,
it's only...
Do you believe in revenge?
No, not at all.
Maybe if there's talent, it's what draws you into something specifically. But like
exactly
beyond that, it's
right.
All work. It's all work.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like loving it enough to want to just do it all the time,
Now, it might be loving it, but also is it kind of being obsessed with it too?
Yeah.
Because I speaking as a cartoonist, I'm just like, I don't know. It's like part of my DNA. Like I just kind of have to, I think.
Like,
it's
like
compulsion.
Yeah, for me, like my resting thoughts are on music and like writing a song or whatever, and I don't have to do something immediate, like paying bills or whatever. It's, as soon as my thoughts come back to like bass, it's like it's in music and playing music and being part of the community and all the things connected to it.
And then as a writer, both, I'm assuming, words and music.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is there a particular process with that where you're writing one before the other, or is it kind of song by song?
Funny you ask me that, because I was just thinking about this. But my general way that I write is like a traditional singer-songwriter where I pick up the guitar, I start playing chords and stuff, and then when I hear something, I start humming it and try and find the melody.
Mm.
And then when I find the melody, I grab the notebook and I write it down.
Oh, okay.
So that's like my general way that I write. But I'm actually working on my next album right now, of course. And during the pandemic, I came up with this sort of different formula for writing that I hadn't, maybe I had sort of dabbled in before, but I kind of like defined it a little better for myself. And that is, there's like three parts to it. The first is that the guitar is in an open tuning, which that just means it's tuned to a chord. So if you're not fretting anything with your left hand, it's, you know, you get
Okay.
a chord. And then you, and it sort of frees you up to move around the neck and let the strings sort of drone, like open without fretting them. So the open tunings was the first thing. Then I was trying to use African rhythms to the songs to, cause I went to Ghana, West Africa in my early 20s and like took guitar lessons and studied some, traditional drumming and stuff. Me and my friend went. And, so during the pandemic, I had time to sort of organize that sort of stuff into my own songs. Cause I never wanted to be the guy that just like plays this traditional stuff. Like, hey, here's a, you know, I mean, maybe a little bit of that, but like I wanted to sort of use it to inform my own songwriting rather than just like sort of steal it.
Yeah.
So I had time to really like work on that. And then the third, so it was the first part was the open tuning, the second part, the African rhythms. And then with the lyrics are more of like a spiritual nature. And I'm would call myself a Taoist maybe if I had called myself anything. So I use the Tao Te Ching for lyrical ideas for it, because like with the sound of the open tunings and the African rhythms, it didn't sound right to sing about like reality stuff, dating or, you know, relationships, any of that kind of regular singer songwriter stuff, didn't work with that kind of music, or at least I didn't think it did.
Mm-hmm.
So I used that sort of spiritual sort of themes for them. So that was like a totally new process for me, those sort of three elements. So the next album that I'm going to release will have a bunch of those songs, which hopefully people like. But
yeah, well, I'm very intrigued.
I forgot about the Ghana thing, but yeah, those are wild times you mentioned and saw a couple photos.
Yeah, and that was part of my college years too, going to Ghana, because after Berklee College of Music, I got my degree at a place called Goddard College in Vermont, which is like they actually just closed, sadly, but it's a progressive school. So our field semester that me and my buddy did was just to go to Ghana, and we had no teachers or anybody set up to meet there. It was just like literally a backpacking trip, and we like wrote about it because it's basically a writing school, and got credit for the semester by doing that.
But how long were you there?
2.5 months.
That's a semester.
Yeah.
Go with a backpack to Ghana.
Yeah, and my guitar.
Try to learn the guitar.
I don't know how you couldn't learn something from that.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, that's,
you'd have to go out of your way to not learn.
Yeah. It was really
easy.
I
think you win that credit. Yeah. I think that's valid.
It was easy because, well, first of all, we were two white guys over there, so you stand out like a sore thumb, and everyone's like, what are you doing here?
And I'm playing guitar,
and we're like, we're here to learn music. Like, oh well, let me take it this person. Let me take it. So it's more just weeding through the people that are real and are actually trying to help you, and the people that are trying to scam you. That's the only challenge. Really.
That can be a challenge.
Yeah, but it's not too bad there. I you know, once you get away from the airport and stuff, that the people are really kind.
Yeah.
It's really nice.
It's like
getting
people
out of the airport is the number one.
Yeah.
Isn't that always the case?
Oh my gosh.
Cabbies.
Airport cabs. Wow. That's it. That I didn't know you were working on that album in that way though. That sounds really super cool and super unique.
Do you have like an ETA on that?
This definitely in 2025. It's pretty close to done. I just don't want to throw a date out there.
And are you doing that upstairs?
Next year or so.
Some upstairs and some in my apartment. I'm playing almost all the instruments on it, but Teague came over the other day actually and put a little percussion and harmonica on it. And Emily Hart sang harmonies on a couple things.
And Emily Hart is someone you just helped record an album with?
Yeah, I just produced her first EP Emily Hart, Mama's Boots, it's called. That's on Spotify and stuff.
Yeah,
thanks. She's great. She's very easy to work with because she's a great singer and
good, really
cool
good voice.
Songs.
Always had a good voice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How many albums did you say you released with Hobo Nephew?
Was it- let me see. There's the self-titled one, then Sing, then I think it's six.
Okay, I think six is what six is what you had said earlier. Yeah. And then had you done stuff before that? Like
Well, my first solo album was before the Hobo Nephews, and I had a band in Vermont called Dad that did a record that we never quite released other than just giving it to our friends.
Okay.
But
not to be mistaken with Duluth Dad's Acid.
Of course.
There's no acid in this Dad.
Well, don't be so sure. But while we were doing the Hobo Nephews, Teague was also making solo albums.
Oh, wow.
So and I actually recorded one, almost all of one, here in this very room, and it never came out.
Oh.
And Dan Dresser, who recorded it, we just got together last week and he gave me the file. So I'm also going to hopefully release that this year.
Wow. Junkies.
Junkies?
Oh. Has nobody ever seen Scooby-Doo before?
I am a big fan of Scooby-Doo.
I keep having this conversation because I apparently have just somehow at some point added Jinkies into my vernacular.
Well, yeah, you love Velma.
Apparently. But then I say it and people are like, what are you saying? I'm like, Jinkies. Jinkies.
Some like junkies. Maybe people are just...
But then
their mind
was
better.
It Shaggy or Scooby that used that word?
Well, I think Thelma.
Oh, Thelma did. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Shaggy also coined. Yeah, no, Zoinks. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like Zoinks.
Zoinks.
Zoinks, Scoob.
Like, come on, Scoob.
Let's get a Scooby snack.
And there was Scrappy.
Oh,
it
kind of
went downhill. Yeah.
No. It's
you
good.
Like Scrappy?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
You're a Scrappy supporter.
See, because I
like Jar Jar then.
No, well, see, I'm young enough where, like, one of the first Scooby Doo's that I saw was James Gunn's live action one in like 2001 or two or whenever that was, in which featured Scrappy turning into this big monster at the end or whatever. I think he peed on somebody at some point too. I feel like I have that memory. And I also have a memory at the very end where Shaggy
and
Scooby.
It's like a Nicaraguan wild dog.
Yeah, it was wild. The end, Shaggy and Scooby eat hot peppers and they have like smoke coming out of their ears or steam. And I remember laughing so hard at that.
You should have seen them the next day.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah, the cartoon was like the 60s because it was. I know that
I was watching reruns.
Me too. Yeah, yeah. That's I think it was must have been the 60s with their psychedelic van and everything.
Yeah.
Puff of Smoke comes out every time they leave the van. We know that. Like,
yeah, there's always a
actual
puff of smoke.
It's from the fog machine.
Yeah.
I went to this babysitter's on a dairy farm, and we would just go get a big silver bowl of snow and then, like, take Kool-Aid and sugar and mix it up and dump it on the snow and, like, watch Scooby-Doo and eat our totally disgusting homemade snowball.
Oh.
That's awesome.
You don't eat it to the bottom because that's where all the bugs and twigs are. But...
Yeah.
Wow.
What an adventure.
That is a Minnesota that's tradition.
Scooby-Doo happiness right there. So,
anyway, I was just back to my initial jinkies. I was just like, you've done a lot. That's really impressive. Because also, we haven't even... you're the baby eyes one, right?
Yeah.
I'm just making sure I'm getting
that's
that
where
right
that revenge... Yeah. Joke came from.
Okay.
I don't believe in revenge. That's a baby I saw.
I mean, I've just been working at it my whole life, and teaching is what I do to sort of support my habit. I've come to love teaching too. Mm-hmm. Now that I'm a bit older, I really appreciate that. And
you were talking about the open tuning, I was I'm like, I understand open tuning, but the way you're saying it out loud makes me understand it even more than I do. And if I didn't know, now I do.
It's almost like a mode, you know what I mean? Like, it's like there's the key that the song is in just by strumming the open tuning.
It was like that teacher side where you're like, imagine if you just hit this open chord and it's this... I forget how you said it,
but it was clear and it made sense.
But it was very clear and made sense. I'm like, well, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember today. I tried guitar lessons one time to give someone guitar lessons, and it was only a couple lessons, and everyone decided, this is no good. This should not be paid for.
Well, at my first teacher, I only lasted 3 or 4 lessons. And then I found this heavy metal guy out by the mall. This was in New Jersey.
This sounds about right.
Yeah, and this was in the, you know, in the metal years back. This was like 89 or something.
I wish we had a picture to post.
Oh, man. I wish I had a picture of this guy. We actually...
No one had cameras back then.
Yeah. We went and saw his band play, and we were all like 13 years old, but my friend's dad brought us to this club, and I guess he could bring, you know, with an adult, I guess minors could
go in a
club. I did
similar things with my guitar teacher that was in a metal
band. Oh, man, what an experience that was. It was incredible.
I didn't even know what 69 was, but that was a song I loved, and I was like singing it all the time. 69, 69. I'm like... No, I thought it was a cool number.
Yeah. I love this song. But yeah, this in South Jersey, like a lot of those bands like Skid Row and Bon Jovi, Cinderella,
Oh, man.
Trickster, they were all from that area.
So I saw Trickster.
My first
show.
Did you really?
Trickster, Firehouse, and Warrant was my first big concert.
Nice.
Yeah. No, not nice.
But anyway, nice, so when... like my guitar teacher's band was like, you know, trying to make it as one of those bands, you know, so it was interesting to see that. And there was 3 bands that played and, you know, they're all like vying for record deals and they're all doing like this sort of like Skid Row kind of.
There's a lot of leather.
Yeah. And girls in spandex and teased hair and.
Teased.
Yeah.
Teased.
And I'm, you know,
very
I was
cool.
13. I thought it was the coolest thing I'd ever seen.
I'm going to get some Aquanet right now.
Yeah. And, you know, I really thought that. And when I first started playing guitar, I thought, like, when I grow up and I'm in a band, I guess I'm basically going to have to, like, grow my hair like this and, like, dress like a woman, basically. Because that's what you do. That's and, like, I'm not sure if I, you know, it might be weird, you know, but I guess I'm going to do that. And then...
Yeah, because if you don't, you wouldn't, your fingers wouldn't work and you wouldn't be able to play the guitar. Yeah.
And then Kurt Cobain came along, luckily, before I became an adult and that all changed. But.
That's so... Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I t-shirts.
Now I just only need a flannel. So much more comfortable than
that
sweaty
leather. It's like, okay,
vest.
Yeah, this is already how I dress, so this is fine.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah.
No, I could be a crab fisherman and a musician, and I don't have to change my clothes.
Yeah. It's all about efficiency.
Yes.
That's right. It's about saving time. When did you, I don't know if we mentioned, when did you start playing music?
When I was 12 or 13.
13. Okay.
I started... My mom played guitar on and off, so there was an acoustic in the house, and I started kind of banging around on that when I was 12, and then when I was 13, I got an electric guitar and got sort of serious about it.
What do you mean by sort of serious? Like, it's just that
I don't know if I knew how to be serious about it. I loved it, and I played it all the time, and I took lessons, and I improved, But I got pretty good, but at Berklee College of Music, it's almost like where I learned how to practice, you know, with like intent. So it was more casual before then.
Yeah. I had somebody tell me that going to art school, like, I guess again, as like a visual person, that you're going to art school not to learn how to draw or anything, but learning how to see. And I would wonder, do you feel like almost like music school is learning how to hear?
Kind of, yeah.
Because
it definitely like the concept of, listening and that's huge in bands and stuff.
Yeah, and being able to almost like pull things apart a little bit better.
Absolutely.
Like,
yeah, that's a great way to put it. Yeah.
And also to totally eliminate any ego you had.
Yeah.
If you want to feel real small and insignificant.
Yeah.
If you thought you were really cool with your spandex.
Yeah. By the time I got to Berklee College of Music, I was like a Bob Dylan and Grateful Dead. You know, head. And I guess like the Grateful Dead and Fish were really technical. And that was part of why I was interested in going to music school. Cause it was like, how does, you know, I was huge into Fish at the time. And, it's just like, how do they do that? How do they arrange their music like that? It's just incredible. And so I wanted to just like have a better understanding of stuff. And
sure, yeah.
My parents wanted me to go to college. So,
well, fine. If I'm doing that, then
I'm going to learn how to play Phish songs.
Yeah, no, I went to art school to learn basically how to draw comics.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I don't know, I'm not going to go and be a doctor. I'm not smart enough. So.
Well, that's, I mean, that's a practical thing, really.
Yeah, yeah.
That's so funny. A customer today asked me, he's like, have you seen Dave Mailing? I'm like, oh, a little bit. And he told me this weird story where it's like, and I know we're going off, but Dave Mailing, who's a great musician, producer, recording engineer, he had a 4.0 in high school and he had a free ride. So
really?
So he just went, well, you know, you have to go to college. If you go to college, his parents, if they're listening, maybe I have the story wrong, but it was something like this. You go get your free ride. Fine, I'll go to college. I'll get a degree, but I want to be a musician. So he went, he got a total degree in business. I mean, he used to come here when he was like 19 years old. He's like, have you thought about this? I'm like, no, but that's a great idea.
Wait, he got a degree in business?
He got a total degree in business, free ride. And then as soon as he was done, his dad's like, well, what are you going to do for a job? He's like, I'm going to be a musician. And this is his friend telling me this today. Just today he told me this. That's why it popped in my hand. He's like, I'm going to be a musician. He's like, don't you want to get like a real job, like the post office? And he goes, his uncle, I should know this. He's listening going, you dummy. But anyways, yeah, Dave just laughed. He's like, no. Post office? No, I'm going to be a musician.
Great.
I only went to school to appease you guys with my free ride, but now I get to be a musician. And he told me this the whole time. It's like, well, I got this free ride. Let's just get a, if you're going to be a musician, it probably doesn't hurt to have a business degree. So he went and got ride business degree and then became a musician. Well, but he's like, he wasn't a musician the whole time, writing 3 songs every week for open mic.
Yeah, and, he never took a break.
Yeah.
Smart guy then, yeah. Yeah.
Big time. Yeah. But also motivated, but also same thing. If you're addicted to it, going back to that, it's like, well, this is, I mean, society maybe doesn't think it's a cool idea, and monetarily it's not a good idea, and business plan, even if you're a business major, bad idea. You know, it's really, how do you write a business plan to be a musician, to be a songwriter, to open a venue and hope people come and, you know, try to repair things on nothing, you know, no matter what. It's like you're a musician, you're driving around in a car that is so old with cables that are almost broken. You know, it's like there's always something breaking and there's never enough money to fix it, but you're still like, this is what I want to do. So
And isn't it also sort of just like when you're making art, that's just not like the kind of side of your brain that you're using, you know? It's like
you just have to do it. It's like, it makes no sense.
No.
in the realm of sense to someone who doesn't understand this world.
Conventional society.
Conventional or whatever.
If
you don't have this addiction, you don't have to worry about it.
But I think that having that addiction and that, it's almost like a certain kind of faith that like makes it work because you know you're going to do it. So you're not, like, for me, as a kid, I was like, I'm totally going to do music. I don't care if I'm rich or poor or whatever. I'm going to do it or die trying, to quote 50 Cent. and I've managed to, here I am, you know, still here doing it. So it's like, just the faith of it kind of carries you through all that stuff, you know, the shitty cars and broken cables. And
Because it's like, well, I don't know, I'm not going to stop. That would be stupid.
Yeah, I know. If there was a better alternative, maybe.
Yeah. Anything you wanted to promote or pitch or anything?
Well, this new album sounds exciting.
I'm putting out a lot of music this year. And I actually, in the early 2010s, I released a couple albums as Ian Thomas Alexi, using my middle name.
That's right.
So they're separate artists on Spotify and all that, you know, that just happened. So I've been one by one taking those albums down and re-releasing them under just Ian Alexi.
Okay.
So I'm kind of getting my whole catalog organized is the plan here.
It's all on Spotify and everything.
Yeah, Spotify, things. YouTube. And I make videos too. And I've
I was going to say you've been releasing videos.
Yeah. Some of them I do myself and sometimes I have help. But that's, I would like to make a video for every song, but there's only
Didn't
so many hours in
a
day.
Didn't you do a documentary too?
I did make a documentary.
I forgot about that. Now I'm thinking, yeah. It just popped in my head.
That was during the pandemic. It was called Making It Shine. I planned on it being a 4-part series, and I only did the first 2. And then the pandemic sort of ended, and it was like, I sort of got back to work playing music, and I never finished it. So at some point, I do plan on making the last 2 parts of it.
I'm assuming Enalexi on Spotify, and then is it Enalexi on YouTube too?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
The
documentary is on my YouTube channel. Okay. Yeah, it's called Making It Shine.
Was there a documentary on Hobo too, or no?
The local PBS.
Someone did something.
Yeah, there's a couple of them.
There's a lot of history on Hobo Nephews, and
there is
lots of great music out there.
Actually, what am I saying? We also produced 2 documentaries ourselves with our friend Joshua Priestley did those. So yeah, I've got a lot of stuff online.
You can get on the YouTubes and
get
in a rabbit
check
hole.
Me out. Yeah.
Yeah. Check me out.
Come into my
Hobbit.
And
Baby Eyes on the back burner? What's happening with Baby Eyes?
Baby Eyes is on hiatus at the moment.
But still amazing music. And
the album, I got the end of the year Spotify account. People are still listening to that Baby Eyes album just as much as when it came out. So.
And you have songs that you wrote for the band and you co-wrote.
Oh, yeah.
And Heidi and the full lineup. It's great. Great lineup and great album as well.
Yeah, thanks. I love how that came out. It's nice to be a part of that.
Yeah.
That wasn't last year, was it? It was the year before?
It came out July, a year and a half ago. What would that be? July 23.
Like everyone trying to do math. That's hilarious.
I feel like once there are numbers involved, I just pretend, but I know, but my brain is not listening.
Yeah, year and a half. Like, it's 2024. So it's...
Now we're at the end of 24. So July of 24 was just like a few months ago. So it was July of 23 that the album came out.
Okay.
Take my word for it. Not quite a year and a half, though. About a year.
Just about Sam.
Close. Well, you guys need a stat guy for this podcast.
No, yeah, we don't. We do not.
A real producer. Not whatever I do. Well, anyway.
What would we do with it?
We have better stats. I don't know.
I'd rather wait for someone to send a note.
If you have any notes,
about our inadequate stats,
you can send a pigeon or something or a letter. We don't take anything digital as far as feedback, so you're gonna have to send something physical in the mail, and hope it gets to us. Figure out the address. Good luck. Just kidding. No, you have to come. You know, people should come here because they want coffee and stuff. We should promote the actual cafe more. Why we do this.
I don't know why we do this.
Partially to say that you exist as a cafe. And
that's true, but mostly it's been just kind of fun. And
do you guys have a Instagram page for this? I know there is for Wusso's Cafe.
Oh, no, not for this specifically, okay. No. I've never really thought about it.
Our marketing is...
it leaves... much to be desired. I don't know. I'm thinking. I think about it. I don't know. I'm not very good at it. I'll figure it out.
I don't know either.
Yeah, work on
it. I think it's, unfortunately, it's just a lot of being on like social media and just posting things. And I just hate that.
And wondering why you need another thing to post.
But you just
You
need to just post it.
Or is the cafe kind of?
Yeah, we just link it to
the
cafe.
Podcast
yeah,
that makes sense. Yeah.
But should do a better job of that.
But yeah, and it's like you have to post it when it posts, and then keep mentioning it until you do the next one, and then you just start mentioning that one.
Yeah.
Just to be like, hey, just remember, we're here. Remember.
That's why we'll tag you and.
Yeah.
You'll help
we'll
us.
Just report yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, anyway.
Super fun.
Thanks for coming by.
Yeah, thanks so much
Ian
for inviting
Alexi, everybody.
Me,
on all things.
Yep. Yeah. Driftless.
Driftless Guitar Lessons.
Yep.
And Ian Alexi Music is my website.
Cool. New album coming up. What's your next show?
I'm playing at Sir Ben's on January 24th. I'm playing at Lake Superior Cafe on February 5th.
What's that?
Over on the hillside.
Lake Superior?
Oh, Lake Superior Brewing.
Okay.
Sorry.
Oh.
My bad.
In the cafe? I haven't been.
Well, the 24th at Sir Ben's.
Yeah.
January 24th
at
Sir Ben's.
I want to do a show here, actually.
So keep an eye out for that, too.
We could book it right now.
Yeah. Yeah, so
lots of ideas. Maybe here shortly. And
yeah, in the new year.
Yeah. All right, Ian Alexi.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.